ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय गिराश्रुताय पुष्पिण्या मधुगन्धेन भूरिणा मत्नाचो महितात्मानः सम्भूयन्तु हरद्विषः गिराश्रुताया पुष्पिण्या मधुगन्धेन भूरिणा मत्नाचोन्मत्तिथात्मानः सम्भूयन्तु हरद्विषः Yiraha,
words, Shrutayaha, of the Vedas, Pushpinyaha, flowery, Madhugandhena, with the scent of honey, Bhurina, profuse, Matna, enchanting. Cha, and. Unmatita atmanaha, whose minds have become dull. Samhuyantu, let them remain attached. Hara dvishaha, envious of Lord Shiva.
Envious of Lord Shiva.
Strong words. Translation, may those who are envious of Lord Shiva being attracted by the flowery language of the enchanting Vedic promises and who have become dull always remain attached to fruitive activities. We've been chanting that responsively for 5 minutes. The Vedic promises, the purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedic promises of elevation to heavenly planets for a better standard of materialistic life are compared to flowery language, because in a flower there is certainly an aroma, but that aroma does not last for a very long time. In a flower, there is honey, but that honey is not eternal. Short purport. Yirashrutaya pushpinya madhu gandhena bhurina matna chon matitat manaha samhu yantu haradvishaha. May those who are envious of Lord Shiva being attracted by the flowery language of the enchanting Vedic promises and who have thus become dull always remain attached to fruitive activities. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Sadakaya Chakshoda Niditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutare Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadatisva Padantikam. The person speaking is Nandishwara. He is angry, a little uncontrolled by, or being controlled by, out of control, controlled by anger, and he's speaking angry words. He's cursing Daksha and the Brahmanas who supported that, not by their words, but by their silence and by their silent consent of Daksha's harsh and offensive words to Lord Shiva. So just first, there's a little bit of, should Nandishwara have spoken this way? And there's a little bit of yes, and there's a stronger no. The little bit of yes that Prabhupada covers in the previous purport is that, or previous purports, is that one should, when a superior like Lord Shiva, the spiritual master and head of all of his followers, when he's blasphemed, as Daksha did, one can't remain silent. So Nandishwara wasn't speaking on his own behalf, but he was speaking on his spiritual master's behalf. So one must speak something or leave the place. And Nandishwara chose to speak something. So that was proper. But what he spoke and the mood of anger that he spoke later, we're going to hear, Lord Shiva didn't approve. He left the place. So the cursing, and then the counter cursing, and then the counter cursing to the counter cursing means one gets drawn into the material energy. And so there's some instruction for us. If someone makes an offense, and a serious offense, Daksha made a very serious offense. My voice is not strong, so. Okay. Daksha made a very serious offense. So something must be done. But tit for tat is not proper. Something must be done. But not make an offense because somebody made offense, so two wrongs make a right. That's not. So having said that, here comes the offense. Or the out of control angry speech. It's three curses. And there is a sequence to them. This is part of the string of the second one. The first one is the followers, the Daksha, and those who supported the Brahmanas, supposed to be Brahmanas, who supported this terrible offense in the bodily conception of life, offense, will be bereft of transcendental knowledge. In one sense, that's not a curse because they're already bereft of transcendental knowledge. Being bereft of transcendental knowledge specifically is having a gross misconception of the self, something very fundamental, just as fundamental within Bhagavad Gita is Krishna's chastising Arjuna. Now the spiritual master, or in this case, Arjuna is taking shelter of Krishna like that. Please instruct me, Shishya. I am your Shishya. Please give me your Shiksha. So, essentially, Krishna's words to Arjuna are, your ethics are fine, you get an A. Your material, your conception of self is wrong, you get an F. And there, so you're applying your ethics to a material conception of life, it spoils the whole thing. So you get an F. overall. Even you got an A, you get an F overall. So little lesson in spiritual conception of life. Imparting transcendental knowledge. So one who holds on to a material conception of life will not be able to assimilate transcendental knowledge. Or say it the other way. Transcendental knowledge is meant to cut to pieces the material conception of life that one has and replace it with a spiritual conception of life. Starting with self, and then the Supreme, and then the relationship with the Supreme, the process that connects one in one's relationship with the Supreme. Those are all parts of Sambandha Gyan. It's understanding basically what's what. What's the Supreme and the relationship of all things with the Supreme, starting with our very seat of consciousness, the self. And then the next curse flows from that one. It's not even, in one sense, it's not a curse. It's just a statement of what is. If one has a misconception of self, it will follow that they'll have a misconception of mind. These two things fit very naturally together. Who am I? And what is mine? Aham and mama. If one follows from the other. If, for example, if one thinks, I am this body, that's a misconception. That's devoid of transcendental knowledge. So then, because there's, Prabhupada teaches us this, in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, there's two psychic divisions of material consciousness, I and mine. So, what falls in the category of mine if I think I am this body? It's whatever is produced from the body. That's mine. Like the fruits of my work. That's mine. And with the fruits of my work, the things that those fruits of work purchase, like, you know, my bank balance and my car and my home and my stuff in my home. And then there are other things that are produced from the body, like children, wife and children and family. My family. And my relatives and my friends. And it just keeps going. The circle of things that are in the category of mine. But core, like what's behind the mind, is the misconception of self. If one doesn't have a proper conception of self, one will be attached to fruitive activities. And the misconception of self and attachment to fruitive activities, we can try to import that baggage with us into the realm of devotional service. It sometimes happens. People think of themselves in terms of the body. I'm American or I'm Indian or I'm black or I'm white or I'm this or that. We think in terms of the body and we designate in terms of the body, not in terms of Krishna consciousness or the soul's relationship with the Supreme and the elevated stage of consciousness in that relationship with the Supreme, but upon the body. Now, that doesn't mean we just ignore standards of social behavior. Men and women can mix freely because we're not this body. That's not the idea. We observe protocols because there's protections, because the bodily identification is very strong. But while observing protocols, we need to bear in mind what our real identity is. The real identity is we're spirit soul. That's transcendental knowledge. And then what things that when one surrenders to Krishna in a spiritual conception, everything that we were considering to be mine becomes Krishna's. Manasa deha geha yoki chumora. Including my problems, all my assets and all my liabilities become Krishna's. Now, we don't want to bring too many liabilities to Krishna. So in the mood of serving Krishna, we like to reduce our liabilities, like, you know, defects or flaws in our character and other kinds of liabilities. So that we can please Krishna very nicely, and Krishna doesn't have to clean up our messes so much, our liabilities. But the mood is, in a mood of surrender, everything belongs to Krishna. So everything that we do is on Krishna's account. And one who doesn't have the proper conception of self, one who is missing like the core issue of spiritual consciousness, spiritual conception of life, unavoidably they will be attached to fruitive activities. Now, in the verse, gira shrutaya pushpinya. Pushpinya comes from pushpa, the word for flowers. So the flowery language of the Vedas. Gira shrutaya pushpinya, the flowery language of the Vedas. Very same idea is discussed in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Krishna indicates, yam imam pushpitam vacham. Vacham and gira are very similar. And pushpitam, the flowery language of the Vedas. Men of small knowledge, this is 242 Bhagavad Gita. Men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas. What's the flowery words of the Vedas? They recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power, and so forth. What goes with that? Bodily conception of life. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life. They say, there is nothing more than this. I've narrated this little anecdote. I'll say it again. It's very appropriate. I was once invited, years ago, Kadamba Kanana Swami was, after he left Mayapur, he became temple president in Vrindavan. And some of the people that were working with him for the construction of Prabhupada Samadhi, he requested them to go to Jaipur and start a center. So I was teaching at VIHE during the Kartik month, and he requested after Kartik, could you go visit Jaipur and give some association to those devotees? They just started a center. Okay, so I went. And they arranged a program at the University of Jaipur. I had never been there before, and I understood these people were also very new to Krishna consciousness. But a Swami, a white elephant, was coming to University of Jaipur. So a lot of people showed up for the program. And I remember very vividly, it was a very large hall, rectangular, long hall. And I sat before this packed audience, maybe 350 people. And just so that it could be a little rapport, I asked them to respond, could you please respond to the following question? Please raise your hand. Listen carefully. Raise your hand if you agree with the following statement. That the purpose of the Vedas is to live your life in a religious way, in a mode of goodness way, so that in this life you can enjoy, but enjoy piously. And after this life, you will be awarded with birth in the heavenly planets. Some much nicer situation than what we have here. How many of you would agree that that's the purpose of the Vedas? Everybody raised their hand. Almost everybody. So I said, wow, that's pretty unanimous consensus here. Is there anybody that has a different idea? One Mataji in the back of the room, because Matajis have to be in the back of the room, right? She raised her hand. I thought, wow, that's really brave. One person out of the whole 350 people. And said, okay, Mataji, what is your idea? What is the purpose of the Vedas? The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. And the way that you can know Krishna is through devotional service. And all the things that are taught in the Vedas are to lead us to devotional service so that we can understand Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by serving Him. And I said, "Wow, you must be reading Prabhupada's book." She said, "Yes." Because that is the purpose of the Vedas. That is the message. Even even where the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas is presented, there's a bhokta of those yajñas. Literally, at the beginning part of any yajña, the standard is one recites a mantra that indicates who's the predominating, who's the bhokta. And guess who that is? It's Krishna. In some cases, it's even Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and that the rest is, you know, karmakanda stuff. But there's the enjoyer who is in that position. Bhoktaram yagyat tapasam. Sarvaloka maheshwaram. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Gyatvamam shantim richchati. So, we're very fortunate. We're not getting our minds sammohita, bewildered by the promise of enjoying prosperously, virtuously, righteously, diving into the pool of material enjoyment, but regulated by religious codes. We're being saved from all of that. And alternatively, there's some religions that's their primary platform. Just one other anecdote. I was visiting Puerto Rico once and driving from the airport to the temple, which is up on a mountain. We drove past this big church. And right next to a big church was an even bigger, like a high-rise building that was going up. Like, you know, very close, like a couple pieces of paper in between the two of them. So I asked the devotee that was driving me, "What's that?" Said, "Oh, that's this infamous priest here in Puerto Rico. Looks like a building to me. What's with the guy?" He teaches God wants you to enjoy. He wants you to prosper. He wants you to take the resources of creation and be an enjoyer. And he's really popular. People who go to that church, they prosper." He said, "What's the building next to the church?" He said, "Those are the people that they make a pledge. You can go to this church every day and you can prosper even more. You just, you know, buy a floor with your prosperity." And it's a big building because it, you know, it works. So the other priests on the island, they're like, you know, they're fried with the guy because they know that's not just what the scripture, enjoy. You know, it's like Rajneesh, enjoy. Only a Christian version of the thing. So it can be really gross like that, or it can be not so gross, but the gross or subtle, the message of transcendental knowledge and being freed from the misconception of life and the misconception of the purpose of our activities in spiritual life is nivritti. It's to gradually reduce the involvement with the material energy and concomitantly increase investing our consciousness in our eternal relationship with Krishna and whatever involvement we have with matters for that purpose. Dharmasya hyapavargasya narcotayopakalpate. And that's only the first part of it. According to the Bhagavatam, This message of Paradharma is whatever dharma you perform, never should the purpose of that be to increase your material prosperity. Artha. It's like smashing the dharma, artha, kama, moksha idea. Never. And then the second part. Nartasya dharma kantasya kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Just supposing I'm going along doing my dharma, not with the motivation of getting some material prosperity, but guess what? Some material prosperity comes. what do I do? I guess God wants me to enjoy it, right? No! Na artha. Na nartasya dharma. Kantasya. Kamo labhaya hi smritaha. Never should that be employed in sense gratification. Then what do you do with it? You offer it to Krishna. Engaging your activities for the satisfaction of Krishna, whatever fruit Krishna brings, you offer to Krishna. Paradharma. That's our Bhagavatam message. So, Nandishwara is cursing those that have this very strong attachment to material conception of life. They'll be bereft of transcendental knowledge, that's already there, and they'll be attached to fruitive activities, which will naturally follow. One follows the other. Therefore, it's perfectly natural that when Krishna is instructing Bhagavad Gita, instructing Arjuna in the message of Bhagavad Gita, the first one is transcendental knowledge about the self. And next, in the second chapter, how do you apply that in practical terms in your everyday working life? Detachment from the fruits of your activity. Do not engage in your religious activity. Don't be the virtuous Arjuna with the idea of being the enjoyer of whatever comes out of your service. That's a no-no. It's forbidden. And the curse is that the followers of Lord Shiva, the followers of Daksha, the Brahmanas who were followers of Daksha, who supported Daksha's offense to Lord Shiva, that would be their destiny. The next verse is the third curse of the three. Basically, in that condition, they'll be fallen. We'll hear the details in tomorrow morning's class. The symptoms of being bereft of transcendental knowledge and being attached to fruitive activities. Now, at the same time, 8:15, sorry, cut off. At the same time, highlighting the importance of transcendental knowledge and detachment from fruitive activities, our principal verse that is the essence of the whole of Nectar Devotion, written by Rupa Goswami, teaches us the same thing. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Jnana karma janavratam. Now, transcendental knowledge is different than speculative knowledge. The descending knowledge that Krishna is giving in Bhagavad Gita, that we regularly study in Bhagavad Gita class and our Bhagavad Gita Bhakti Shastri courses, is different than speculative knowledge. Its descending knowledge is transcendental knowledge that enters into the heart when one hears in a proper manner, from proper source, in the proper mood. It enters into the heart and it destroys the darkness of ignorance. It destroys the material conception. It awakens the spiritual conception. Sometimes there's a doubt in the minds of devotees. We're not supposed to be cultivating knowledge. So why are we studying these books? And why did Prabhupada write the books? And why are we distributing the books? And certainly, you know, we're not supposed to do these things. Why are we doing these things? Because it's different. It's different between trying to understand by our own little speculative power, like taking a flashlight looking for the sun. That's something we're not supposed to do. The sun is self-illuminating. We are supposed to take light from the sun. That's descending knowledge. That's transcendental knowledge that we are supposed to do. We are supposed to study Bhagavad Gita and purify our intelligence by worshipping Krishna, by studying that sacred message, by bringing our consciousness to the illumination of Krishna's consciousness, Krishna's transcendental knowledge. That's what we're supposed to be doing on a regular basis. And by so doing, our love for Krishna, our appreciation of who Krishna is, and thus our love for Krishna, it awakens. The inspiration to serve Krishna, because now we understand who Krishna is. In that, at least we have the opportunity, more so, through the medium of devotional service, being situated in transcendental knowledge to do that. And so many things can be said, but this is the theme. It's fundamental in Bhagavad Gita, so naturally it weaves its way into the Srimad Bhagavatam, well, again and again and again, in so many ways. When, for example, just one, when Rishabhdev is instructing, it's in another yuga, and it's another form of the Lord, but it's the same ABCs. It doesn't change. It's the same ABCs. Parabhavastavat abodhajato yavan na jigyasata atma tatvam nasado manye yata atma nyam asanapi kleshita asha deha. Asha deha. If one's hopes for happiness are fixed upon the body, one's defeated. One cannot, the purpose of human life is spoiled. However good somebody might be in the worldly estimation of good, or pious, or virtuous, or just like Arjuna, or anybody of the world. Karmatma kamyena sharira bandha. The instruction of Rishabhdev is, as long as one's mind, because mind carries conceptions of life, as long as one's mind is carrying the conception that I am this body, the mind is going to be polluted. The mind is going to be colored, and specifically colored with fruitive intentions. And such a person, scriptures tell us, that person can't help themselves, another person can't help them, and the combination of the two can't help them. They're helpless. Unless they let go of that material conception and the attendant fruitive intention that goes with it. Try to advance, and scripture doesn't recommend. Don't try to advance in spiritual life holding on to a material conception and fruitive intentions. You won't get very far. So serious devotees need to take that message seriously. And while practicing devotional service, which is, stronger than dirt, it's so powerful. It can remove all of that. But there has to be receptivity to the message. Hello, the message is, this material conception has to be given up. We're eternal spirit souls, meant simply for serving Krishna. Whatever the position or opportunity of service is, thank you, Krishna. You're very kind to engage me in some service. Let me take that service opportunity very, very seriously, whatever it may be. From, we use this ISKCON example, the pot washer. It's actually a very illustrious position to cleanse the heart, to keep Radharani's kitchen very clean, or whatever the service may be, from the top to the bottom and in between. The social nuances of what one's position, as far as Krishna is concerned, that doesn't matter. What matters is the consciousness that we carry into the activity that we're doing. And so we attend Bhagavad Gita class and we worship the deity and we chant the holy name so that through the medium of the other forms of devotional service, we can advance in Krishna consciousness. Advance in Krishna consciousness means in our relationship with Krishna, that we can see the other things that are around us, surrounding the spirit soul, this whole ocean of material energy. How can we see that material energy in relation to Krishna? It's an opportunity to serve him. We're designated some service. Some capacity is given. Some ability is given. Some designated responsibility. Okay, you're in charge of that part of the material energy, to make it, to spiritualize it in Krishna service. And then we carry Krishna consciousness with us into that field of devotional service and realize our relationship with Krishna, realize the connection that that energy has with Krishna, and become ecstatic. And if some circumstance comes to change that to another service, we're ready, because it's just service to Krishna that we want. That's Krishna consciousness. But if we hold on to a material conception, then it becomes something, it's not Krishna conscious. It becomes turf conscious and position conscious and so unpleasant in so many ways. So this is nice instruction. Nandishwara's cursing, it's not nice that he's in this out of control angry mood, but the point that he's making is very instructive. And the 8:15 bell is ringing, so I'll end there and see if there's a few questions. Any questions, comments? Archita, up here. So was.
Well, thank you for a very wonderful class. It appears that in order for a devotee to really understand, when you're a new devotee, you get a lot of instruction. And from your own instruction...
Too many.
You kind of can get, you can develop. If somebody's very compassionate and they speak to you very nicely at that, and they have a very sincere desire to give you Krishna consciousness, it produces enthusiasm.
Yeah.
As we become older in Krishna consciousness, we still have to continue the assessment process.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very difficult to do that on your own. It's not... You know, it's a difficult process to kind of like,
wow,
you know, have someone instruct you, and you feel like, well, you know, sometimes you find that devotees, even after 6 or 7 months, they feel they know the ropes, and they feel that they know everything that there is to, more or less, to know. But still, at the same time, in this particular pastime, it seems that there's a lot of elevated souls here, and somehow or other, how is it that they could become so overcome by these different natures? What is it that we can do as devotees not to fall into that, you know, that kind of a mood of like being angry at the drop of a feather, even for that matter, not even a penny, but a feather? Or what should we do to understand where we are in Krishna consciousness, and to really admit it, I mean, to really understand it or realize it?
I thank you for your nice question. Just before, I mean, the evening before I got on a plane to come to Los Angeles, I had about a 2-hour discussion with one devotee on this topic. You know, precisely on this topic. And, like, you know, the essence of the message that he was expressing was, when that opportunity for both for expressing and for hearing, like, you know, evaluation and also expressing, it's very difficult. So one should go out of one's way, and our society should try to help put some structure in place where that's possible. And certainly it can happen informally. And it's better, as you know, from, you know, as managing a very complicated thing as New Dwarak is, better to not let it be informal, better to structure it in a formal way. Then you know, in a regular ongoing fashion, you know, you critique the persons, but then you as a manager, or we as Prabhupada disciples, we need the critique of others. So structure it, you know, understand the importance of it and structure it. You know, find at least find a companion, and through peer evaluation, that's also very valuable. And similarly with peer evaluation, it's important that, you know, the peer is not just somebody that's going to pat you on the back and say, "Yeah, you're my friend. Everything you're doing is good," but then take some critical feedback. Just like Anuttama's leadership seminar, not for the purpose of criticism, but for the purpose of improvement. Positive improvement, positive method. Or just as we did in our DBC meeting. That was just, you know, that's not our quota for the year. But it's a principle that one understands the principle. Wow, this is really valuable. And naturally, there has to be some trust level where, you know, that trust so that your heart is open, you're ready to receive whatever it is and take it seriously. But very important. A lot of things that can be said about that one. Anything else? The two questions, then we'll end. Okay.
If, for example, the very useful instruction is given by somebody from the position of false ego.
From the useful instruction spoken by someone from the position of false ego. What is the real value of the instruction? The real value is the real value is the valid instruction. In other words, so if one is sufficiently swan-like, one can take the nectar or the milk and leave the rest. Okay. So how swan-like are you? That's a question for you to answer. But your question is, what is the value of the instruction? The value of the... Chanakya Pandit says one can take a good lesson even from a fool. I mean, you know, if there's a good lesson. If one can understand, Krishna can act through so many personalities. Then it's Krishna. And then there's a person with false ego, but there's a message from Krishna for you. It's got your name on it. You say yes to Krishna. And you don't you don't have to embrace the false ego, but you embrace the good instruction. Your surrender is to Krishna. Yeah? That's what swans do. They surrender to Krishna. And crows, they just make noise. They bark back at the person with false ego, and they miss the Krishna connection. It's all right? Okay. One last question here. The deliverer of the microphone.
The question I have is, it seems to me that when I engage in material activities, like day-to-day activities, I think of Krishna. But when I absorb myself in spiritual activities, I start to think of material activities. I don't know if that's just the nature of my mind, or I don't know if what... Have you heard of this condition, and what can you recommend for it?
Why and what to do? Well, I've certainly heard of that condition, and our scriptures and our acharyas instruct us that the primary activities of devotional service are our primary activities, the hearing and chanting activities. So if the mind goes away, that says something about the quality of your mind going to Krishna when you're engaged in material activities. A recommendation, considering the hour where we are, I'm going to just give a short answer. The recommendation is make extra effort when you're doing your primary activities. And if the mind goes elsewhere, you follow Krishna's instruction. Bring the mind back. However many times you have to do that. Bring the mind back, bring the mind back, bring the mind back. And you offer your prayers to Krishna. Please keep my mind absorbed in you. And offer some prayers to your mind or instructions to your mind. My dear mind, you've been in charge too long. Lifetimes. You haven't been doing a good job. So sit down. Be quiet. And absorb yourself in Krishna. Manashiksha. Give instructions to the mind. And work on it regularly. Like, each mantra, each Bhagavatam class, each time you come before the deities. Don't just be mindless when you come before the deities. Absorb your consciousness. Practice absorbing your consciousness in prayerfully and submissively coming before the deities and offering yourself to their service. Become attached to Rukmini Dwarkadish by that practice. Let the activities that you then go out and do in the world be for them, so that when you're in front of them, my work is an offering to you. You're very kind to give me remembrance of you when I'm at work. It's just make the connection by cultivation, especially in your primary activities. Wherever you may be, you're hearing and chanting and worshiping. Those the nine direct processes of devotional service, be especially attentive, because your testimony is that's when the mind goes elsewhere. So counter that by special attention in a prayerful mood and an instructing the mind mood. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.